Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Francisco. It's nice to see you.
Likewise. Where are we going today?
Well, before we go anywhere, I want to ask you a quick question, putting you on the spot a little bit.
Sure. What's up?
All right. When you think about being an adult growing up, because you're getting ready to leave the university, how will you know when you're actually an adult? How will you say to yourself, I now know I am a grown up?
Probably the crippling anxiety of day-to-day life yet, you know? Like, okay. That first and foremost. Probably, but on a more realistic note, I'd say maybe when it comes to like just settling down for me, if that makes sense.
Okay. When you feel like you're rooted in some way, right? That you've kind of taken your place amongst all of the other settled down people in the world.
Right, right. And you know, settling down is such a vague term. But once once I start to feel like I'm finally planting my roots somewhere, that's when I would say, okay, I'm an adult.
All right, that's fair. And that's actually a fairly accurate description. You know, I teach a whole section in my family psychology classes on what it takes to launch into adulthood and the four vital skills that go into that we need to master to actually kind of move into that space. And that's learning your social skills, right? How to adapt to social situations, how to make friends, how to make relationships. There's the emotional launching where you learn to take personal responsibility for your actions and to, understand your values and your belief systems and kind of come to grips with your family of origin. And then there's the financial launching. And a lot of people connect their launching to that when I can finally pay my own bills, finally pay my own way, I'm actually an adult. But because of the complexity of our social structure right now, financial launching can be tricky for a lot of people. So that's not really an indicator that you've reached adulthood. And then the fourth is physical launching. And that's learning to take care of yourself, right? Learning to eat well, exercise, get enough sleep, care for yourself. So those four areas are the basics for launching into adulthood. But they really are the basics. Because when you look at what it takes to be able to not just survive in the world autonomously as an adult, There's a psychic shift that also happens. It's that psychic shift of taking your place independently of all of the stories you were told growing up. And you've kind of sourced through them, parsed through them, looked through them, and then determined, given all those stories and given who I am, here is my place in the world. And it's really just a starting place, because as we grow and age and develop and change, that starting place morphs and we grow in different ways. But I would say that part of that step into adulthood is when you can autonomously describe how you see yourself in the world, that you're no longer just your parents' children and you follow their belief systems. You're no longer a student who is moving through the education system. And in some ways, you're not just a worker who's anxiously trying to find employment to be able to pay their bills, that there's one more step to adulthood, and that's really stepping into your own skin and kind of owning all of the parts of you, the good, the bad, the ugly, and coming to some acceptance of who you are, and then carving out a life that is true to who you see yourself as being. Because I think most of us go into early adulthood just following the path and the story that our parents and our school system and our culture said, this is your story, follow all these rules, and then you'll just be a stellar adult. But I think what you described as kind of that terror of moving into the unknown is that although we may be raised with a story, that story might not suit us. We might not be able to go down that path that was pre-prescribed for us and feel okay. And so the real challenge of adulthood is finding the story, finding the path that really resonates to who you truly are. And that's why a lot of people go through their entire college career and get a degree in something that they were told would be great for them. And they start their first job and they hate it. And they get there and think, why am I doing this? And it's because they kind of just followed the story that they were told from the time they were young. But then they achieved that that job or that goal and realize this isn't for me. And so there's the path that we're told to take. There's the paths that we try, because also along the way, we rebel against our parents, we rebel against the path, and we rebel against the social structure. And so we try to kind of make our mark in completely kind of polar ways than we were told. But then there's that kind of coming together. Where am I in that continuum of the path I was told to take that might not be for me, and the veering off path that also might not be for me? And where do I fall? And I think that's the greatest challenge, is having the courage, having the conviction, having the patience with ourselves to be able to say, you know, that degree you told me to get and that job that would be perfect, it doesn't suit me and I'm walking away from it. But it's not enough to just say, and now I'll do nothing. It's the then what? Because we can understand that we don't like the path that we're on, but finding that alternative can be almost as challenging as staying on a path that's not good for us or healthy for us. So for me, that coming together of the two extremes, the path that I was told to take and the wild path I thought I might take, is that middle ground adult path. And so I wanted to talk about that today for many reasons. One is that one of my former students, David Gudiel, that you all know because he was a guest host last summer, and he's been on the show a couple of times, and I had the honor of watching him kind of grow into himself over his time at Cal Poly. We've been in contact, and he's had a really interesting year in pandemic, year post Cal Poly experience, and his story was so interesting for me. I wanted to share it with you because I love stories about ordinary people doing extraordinary things, but also because what's happening in the world with the pandemic and all of the social unrest. I mean, we had another shooting yesterday, you know, a police shooting, and we've had other mass shootings, and we are seeing rising pandemic cases, COVID cases. Like, things are really rocky, shaky, uncertain, and terrifying. And this generation, and I'm going to add you, Francisco, you're part of this generation that's coming into the world trying to find the path to adulthood, is stepping into a much different story than even their cohort 2 years ago stepped into. You know, this year, the next year, last year, this group of people stepping into their place in adulthood is finding that story they were told to follow, even if they wanted to follow it, isn't there anymore. Employment-wise, the jobs, opportunities, the ability to afford even rent, let alone buying a house, like, that path is drying up quickly for these last couple of years, and it has been for a while. And so that's doubles the fear of where do I go next? But on the other hand, it's an incredibly exciting time because this generation is getting to rewrite what it is to be an adult, to interact in the world, to find your place. So if you can handle the dissonance or the discomfort or the unknowing, it's an incredibly freeing time, because that very limited story, that very limited definition of what an adult could be in our society, which was get a college degree, get a really good corporate job, and, you know, fall in line, because that has come apart in so many ways, this is a chance for you in all of the opportunities of the world to rewrite what it is to be an adult and what it is to find your place and take your place. So that's kind of where I'm at today, is grappling with what it looks like to become an adult in a world that is rapidly changing socially, economically, politically, and how to adapt that. And so we're going to talk about it, David and I, from his perspective, from my perspective, and you're also welcome to call in with your perspective, and Francisco will be happy to read your questions over the air. Our number is 805-549-8833. Did I get that right? Every week I have to ask Francisco to remind 805, me.
The number to call is 805-549-8855. So
8855. Thank you so much. So if you'd like to share your thoughts on this topic, you can give us a call and Francisco will happily read them. 549-8855. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can also join us on Instagram Live. If you follow us, go to Instagram, look for The Reluctant Therapist. Here we are, David and I and Francisco and Sasha, our intern. You can also ask a question that way. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow our show through Facebook. You can also podcast our show, listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. There's a lot of ways to be engaged. We'd love to hear from you. And we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to start our conversation with David Gudiel. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Kids at home, but baby, I know that that isn't true, because your mama's the toughest person I know. I want to raise you to be like her and watch you show the world how to do it on your own. I'm still trying to figure out who I am. I don't want to mess this up or do this wrong. I'm gonna be there for your first breath. I don't know if I'll be there for your first step. I could promise you that I'll try to work less, but the tour's routed and I got this album. Put in so many hours and I just want the outcome to be something that I can look back and I can be proud of. Don't want to be a dad that's living in FaceTime, but I got a world to sing to and you at the same time. I won't spoil you, you can trust that. For your sweet 16, you get a bus pass. Had your heart broken, been there, done that. I love you and I can't give you enough of that. Get back to community that raised you up. Read Langston Hughes, I suggest a raising in the sun. Listen to Sam Cooke, a change gon' come. You put the work in, don't worry about the praise, my love. Don't try to change the world, find something that you love and do it every day. Do that for the rest of your life and eventually the world will change. I'll be patient one more month. You'll wrap your fingers around my thumb. Times are changing, I know. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thanks for tuning in. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. David Gudiel, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right. So I briefly gave a little backstory that you were a student of mine. We had three classes together over your time at Cal Poly. Mm-hmm. And you had a lot of transformative experiences.
Yes.
And then, and then you went out into the world a year ago. And I wanted to talk about kind of how that launch has been for you, and some of the things that you have discovered. But I guess the first thing I want to ask is, how are you feeling at this moment, having heard kind of the introduction to the show?
To be quite honest, my heart's racing a little bit, but it's just because I feel like I know that it's excitement, and I'm naming it as excitement. And I think it's because there's a lot to share in today's conversation, and I hope that there's a lot that the listeners can take and relate. So that's how I'm feeling. I'm really excited because I'm like, this is such a fun topic to discuss.
And so when you hear me describing kind of the difference for graduates just even 3 or 4 years ago to what you're experiencing stepping in, did you resonate?
Little spot, small spot, but more so it's just like when you think of the fact that there's a global pandemic going on and you are concerned for your friends' and your family's well-being all the time and your well-being and safety, and especially when you live in the U.S. like things are pretty stressful here all the time. So it's just, the world is just a bit different where there's like a global shift in consciousness, I would say, that there are a lot of things that were happening, but I think the general population or larger population weren't really aware of like the depth of how like big the issues were that we have to face in this like generation, this lifetime. And I think that our generation in the last, the people that graduated last year, this year, in the next 2 years, like they're the ones that are going to feel it the most. And I always talk about it with my friends that I'll never know young adulthood without the pandemic. And that's always going to be my experience. So it's like, I not only just like jumped into the adult world, I feel like I was thrown into the deep end of the pool, but now I'm swimming.
And I think that that's kind of what struck me when we talked before, was that there was no soft landing out of Cal Poly or out of school for anyone into this last year. There was instant adulthood because no one really knew what was going on. You know, in most periods of time, you could go to your parents and say, hey, I need to navigate renting a place, or I need to some help writing my resume, or, you know, you have mentors that can kind of help guide you in that transition. But when you leapt out of school, nobody really knew what was happening in how to get employed or how to get work or how to live, you know, on unemployment. And so you all of a sudden, that whole wealth of mentors had kind of dried up because the mentors, we were all struggling as well to come up with answers. So what was it that you expected, you know, before the pandemic hit, when you looked at your kind of finishing up your education and moving out into the world, what did you think it was going to look like? Start with that before we go into what it became. What were you moving towards?
When I was like, let's say in my last year before I stopped going to school and like the pandemic happened, honestly, I had no idea. I just knew that I did a lot of events on campus. I was an orientation leader, worked at the cross-cultural centers. I did a lot. I feel like if you were at Cal Poly at the time when I was there, you would see me on posters everywhere or doing events or out in the university union. And I think that it just tapped into a lot of like my extroverted energy. So I always told myself, like, I might not know what job I'm going to get afterward, but I got a good head on my shoulders and I'm good at teamwork and that's going to count for me. And I always kind of walked with that mentality of not like a destination. Because one time I took a class with Professor Aaron Estrada, and there was a quote that's like, happiness is not a destination, it's a direction. So I kind of applied that framework into my career. I was like, well, not really a job, but a thing that I want to be working in. And the thing that was hard about that was almost all of them included in-person contact, because I'm such a social person, or at least I want to say like I was in a certain way, because I feel like now I definitely have a different shift of how I choose to share my energy, and like being in groups has been a lot different recently with things opening up or like closing back down in the pandemic experience. But yeah, a lot of my job perspective ideas that I had were like, oh, let me do social work, working in nonprofits or working with kids or in schools. And now a lot of those things are, now it's coming back in different parts of the state and in the country. But overall, it was something that really shook me, because it was like everything that I thought I wanted to do was no longer available. And I was like, how do I sit with that?
And that's what I think had to have been overwhelming, is that you had this, you have this, these gifts, these skills that are supposed to propel you, and now all the skills aren't accessible. So what happened instead?
Dang. Okay. Can you be more specific? What happened instead of like terms of what, like instead month of- to month, season, yearly, like what, like personal, because- everything. I feel like the first thing I think about is I really got my health. When the pandemic hit, I was like, health. And like, it's, I mean, I talk about it sometimes, but I can definitely talk about it in the air. But when I was in college, I was balding. I was balding at a young age of like 20, 21. And I was just overstressed. I did not sleep well all the time. I was consistently worried about finishing projects for school. Yerba Mate was like my best friend. And like, you know, all these different things were going on. And when the pandemic happened and I was allowed to sit with my own feelings and create my own schedule, I think that's what like put me where I am today, and acknowledging how important sleep is for me and my rest. So I think that the first thing that happened when the pandemic hit and like school schedule stopped for me, it was like rest. Like create space for yourself, like tap in into your mind and your body. Like where are you holding in all this stress, and like release it. So my now fiance, but at the time was my partner. She had moved in with me, and she's kind of put me on to sound bowls in the morning, and we would always have like tea, and we would follow like this Ayurvedic health route of like trying to be as healthy as we can. And that was like my first calling, like physical health, but it was still in this like white Western view of health that like I just have to eat healthy and feel good and I'm going to be okay. But I know that health is multidimensional, to include emotional, physical, mental, like spiritual health, like all of these things, and social health, you know, all these things got integrated. And they were also broken apart because the pandemic happened. But yeah, I tapped into a lot of things for myself. If you want to ask me more questions, because I can go anywhere.
No, I know. And it's interesting, because I just walked down and I checked off, physical health, one of the launching areas for adulthood. And interestingly, because you weren't able to rush into employment, you know, kind of find that job out in the world, and because of the pandemic, it allowed you that space to kind of think about your physical health and to re-navigate what that looks like to be healthy. And you kind of threw in there, and maybe I hope we'll tap back into it later, that it wasn't just about the Western model of getting healthy, going to the gym, working out, right, eating protein and being strong, mm-hmm. that you had an awakening of your cultural health mm-hmm. and well-being yes. and tapping more into your indigenous roots and what was healthy and good for you. And mm-hmm. that's been a topic that we've been talking about over the last few months, about getting out of just kind of this one Western ideal of how it is to be and really rediscovering. And so part of that rediscovering of who you are included a visit.
Oh yeah. There was definitely a visit to Guatemala. So, to those listening, my mom is from Mexico and my dad is from Guatemala. And they immigrated to the United States before I was born. And I was born in the United States in 1997. basically, I think that, yeah, when the pandemic happened, we're thrown onto all these things. Like, there was an opportunity that came last year where I was able to go see my father. And I'm always very thankful to Professor Barrett. And I wasn't called Professor Barrett, but her teachings, because there was a project one time we had to do. It was a family genogram. And basically, we were supposed to map out our whole family. And I'm connected to like 90 people, 100 people, and just my mom's siblings and my dad's siblings. And when I did my own genogram of my family, I began to notice certain like behavioral patterns that we have. Like, oh, who's a little anxious, and who likes to do certain things, and who's extroverted and who's introverted. And I was really like strong with like my mom's side, but I wasn't really strong with my dad's side. And the reason why is because when I was 10 years old, my dad was deported from the US, and he was like wrongfully deported, where he wasn't like legally supposed to be. But the way that the United States has treated Central American immigrants has been horrible, to say the least. And there's a whole history on that. But yeah, so when he was deported, like, I didn't really have, like, my father figure for a while. And my mom remarried a couple years later. But it wasn't, like, it was just, like, a long story. But that's what happened. And then I was like, oh, okay. And I resented my dad for a long time. So to me, it was like, I could never, like, just go see him when I was in college, because I'd always be like, oh, I'm in school. Like, can't do it for spring break. Can't do it for summer. Can't do it for winter break. But when I was out of school and everything was going on, I was like, I actually have this opportunity. And at the time, I was working a 40-hour job, and I had just started as well. And I told them when the opportunity happened in December, like, hey, I'm going to Guatemala. Like, sorry, but you're gonna have to give me the days off. And they did. And I felt really cool to speak with my confidence and to get that. And going to see my dad was an experience, because you have to put the pandemic on top of that. And I went because my aunt, she has like terminal cancer, and it's his sister. So she was going to go see her brother and live her best life. And I was like, I can go with you. And seeing my dad, like, really put my story, like, it's like a storybook that just came together. It's like I found the missing pages in my book. And it was more like the intro or the prologue. It was the things that happened before me to understand how I got to where I am, and kind of bridging that space in my lineage. Does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, to me, it does. If you're just tuning in, my guest is David Gudiel. He is a former student of mine from Cal Poly. He has had a very interesting year. He was our guest host last summer in July and talked about his goals and dreams for the future. And then he went out into the world, and this last year has been incredibly interesting. We're just tapping into the story of going down and seeing your father. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And so how long had it been since you'd seen your dad before you went to Guatemala? Because yes, you were angry at him, mm-hmm. but how long had it been since you'd actually seen each other and talked about any of this?
It was 13 years.
13 years.
Before I got to see him again, before I got to like physically see him in person again. Yeah.
So what were your expectations when you went to, like, were you mostly going because your aunt was sick and you wanted to be a good nephew, or were you curious to see your dad? Like, what drove you at that moment? Because you'd had other opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, it was a little bit of both. I know that with my aunt, I was like, I'm going to go enjoy this moment because I don't know if this possibility will ever happen again. And the second one was, yeah, to also go see my dad. I think that for myself, I positioned myself in my own story, kind of saying, I'm going to Guatemala to rebridge and like re-nurture that connection to that land of Guatemala where my ancestors are from. Because in the context, and I always say this, in the context of my genetic lineage, I am the first one in the last generation to be born on this land of the United States, like, you know, Kumeyaay land here in San Diego. And I am not from here. Like, I am from elsewhere. So for me, that's what it kind of was. My dad was kind of a part of the story, but not the main thing. And I say that because throughout my years with my dad, he did try to reach out to me, and I was like a teenager, not really understanding, a lot of resentment. So I always push him away. And what that really ultimately did to me was like kind of push in or block off or dampen my connection to my masculinity. And that was very important to me because my dad was someone who was very aggressive when I was a young kid. And that's the last thing I remember from him. So going to see him, I was physically scared too. I felt like a little kid because I was in a position where I'm going to see my dad, who my brain would go into a narrative that I would have to tell myself, like, this is not happening anymore. This is, I'm an adult now. And I got to see him, and the first thing I did was hug him and cry, because I realized that sad, like, that anger is a secondary emotion to sadness. And the sadness that I was experiencing was ultimately the love that I missed out on, or I believe I missed out on. And when I look back on that, love is abundant everywhere. And there are many mentorship and figures that come along my way. But seeing my dad himself also, I think, released me from so much guilt that I had in myself, because I like to say that we are all the same spirit in a certain way. And what I mean by that is, you know, one time I took a philosophy class, like, what is God and can God experience everything? And, well, if they know everything, what is it, the world? So the God consciousness is in all parts of us to experience all parts of the world. Because in my body, my life will be different than your body, Professor. So we're all part of this like same spirit. And I feel like seeing my dad is like seeing the flowers. Like, if you get a flower and you plant the seed in a pot and you water it, it grows good, right? In this little pot. If you put a seed into a planter outside in your yard and you put it with other things, it's going to grow differently. And I feel that me and my dad are like a representation of that seed story, where my dad is myself and I am him, but we were born in different times and with different resources in different parts of the world. And how is it that we connect our stories together? And I think I really explored that when I went over and dissected myself, observed his behavioral patterns, saw them in myself. And you feel like you want to ask me a question about that?
Well, I mean, I'm just letting you kind of sort this through, because there's a lot of things that are happening at once. I imagine mm-hmm. the flood of emotion that you haven't seen him for 14 years, all of the anger that you had carried with you as a kid. And you were faced with this moment where you now, you know, had left the comfort of being a student. And the expectation was, now what do you do with your life? And so what an interesting moment is that. I would imagine it was hard to think of what you're going to continue on to do with your life if you haven't come to peace with the broken parts of your childhood that probably mm-hmm. still haunted you, which is connecting with your dad. And so mm-hmm. to travel to Guatemala and to see him, first that wave of emotion of sadness, but I would imagine even though you were filled with emotions of sadness and then love and then acceptance, there had to have also been the part of you that wanted to beat him on the chest a little bit and say, where were you the last 13 years? I mean, there had to have been a bit of that as well.
Yes, there definitely was. I just remember telling my fiance at the time, I'm scared that if I go, I'm going to punch him in the face. And then I'm going to get in a fight with my dad. And that's not what I really want. And when we got there, we were hanging out outside one night. And he's recovering alcoholic. So I told him, like, I will not be drinking in front of you. And I told him, like, I'm not going to put that in front of you because I don't want to disrupt you. At the same time, I know that if I get inebriated, I'm going to say things to you that are going to hurt your feelings. And he kind of laughed at me in the beginning, but I had like a very serious face on with him. And he kind of reacted in a way like a child would, where they're kind of like, oh, there's going to be a talk soon that I'm not ready for. And I mean, we both knew it was a long time coming when we did have that talk. We had certain talks and we left a certain way and we still talk today, but yeah, there was just so much in there. I mean, it just depends what you want me to share from that, because I can unpack different levels.
Well, and I think that this is the visit down to see your dad was kind of part of the setting the stage for how mm-hmm. this year has gone for you. But I think I wanted to make sure that we kind of got into it, the weeds a little bit, because there's so much healing that happened with your dad that I think freed you and opened you to be able to move in the direction you're going today. So that's
why so many ways.
Right. And so it's why I didn't want to jump away, because I think for so many people, it's the things we left undone. And we think that moving into adulthood, we're going to be able to run away from it, or we're going to be able to move past it, or we're going to be able to reinvent ourselves so that story isn't our story anymore. But the stories unresolved haunt us. I think
people
carry those unresolved stories well into their adulthood, or maybe their entire life. And they wonder why they struggle with their own addictions, or they wonder why their relationships continue to fail, or they wonder why, you know, all these things happen. And when you sit with the therapist or you do the work and you go back, for many people, it's the unresolved narrative of their childhood and their relationship with their family and their relationship with their family of origin, or the expectations people had for who they were going to be. And I think that's why what's happened this year, from my perspective, is so remarkable, is it almost unintentionally, because you didn't go to Guatemala with the plan for...
I just said yes.
Right. You didn't have this plan, but the unintentional experience was that you have almost closed the chapter on your childhood in such a way that it has freed you to actually start to becoming an adult. And I think a lot of people never actually become adults because they're consistently stuck in the story of their childhood. Their inner child is still running their life when they're 50, 60. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And my guest today is David Goodiel, and he has been kind enough to say, I'll open myself up, I'll open a vein, Professor Barrett, and I'll tell you how this year has been. So we're kind of discussing that path to adulthood in the time of pandemic and social unrest and change. And we're happy to hear your story. If you have a question or a comment you'd like to share, our number is 805-549-8855. And Francisco will be happy to read it to us over the air. And you can join us on Instagram. Hello to all the Instagram Live people. Just go to Instagram, look for The Reluctant Therapist, and you can join us on the air that way. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back to continue our conversation. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
How the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Don't wanna be a richer man. Sides, but never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
You're listening to our weekly conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. If you have any comments for our guest today, you can call them in at 800-549-8855. KCBX is also currently in our pledge drive period, and we're asking you to make a donation of any amount by also calling 800-549-8855 or visiting us at kcbx.org. Elizabeth, back to you.
Thank you, Francisco, and thank you, David, for hanging out with me today. I always like talking with you. And so I left us off kind of talking about how almost unintentionally this trip down to Guatemala, because it wasn't all, you had no intention of going down and healing this relationship with your dad. Part of you, just you and your fiance, wanted to go to Guatemala and see the land of your people. But your dad and you covered a lot of territory.
Yeah,
and,
it did.
And how did that shift for you when it was time to leave? To leave him.
So when we were there, we did have conversations where, and it's funny because I'll reference to the listeners, there was a time when I had a class with Professor Barrett, and one of her homeworks was interview someone who was old, like an older person, someone to reflect on their life story. And when I did my person, that person, he told me, he said, he shared his experience about him forgiving his father and all the years that he went through with substance abuse and physical, like harming himself and things like that. And when he was telling me this story, I just felt that I was seeing my life go to someone else. I was saying, this is going to happen to me if I do not forgive my father. And that was before I graduated, before I was like done with school, all that stuff. So it was really funny because when the pandemic happened and everything happened, it felt like there was no excuse anymore because now I did have the opportunity. And I'll also reference, being in college feels like your kid self gets to live in the middle of the adult world self without any like big consequences because you're in a bubble. You're living in a 3 month cycle period. You're with friends, people your age, you have access to some resources, and living in San Luis Obispo, arguably one of the best places in California. So it's kind of this, you're like kind of a child when you're in college because you get to try all these new things away from home that you kind of weren't told to, and you found things you do and don't like. But leaving college is a whole different experience because you don't have all these social structures. And for me, it felt like I don't have social structures. I don't know what I'm doing with myself. And I'm being called to go see my dad. And what do I do with that? So going to see my dad, we had our conversation, cried it out because it was very important to release those tears with him. I told him, like, I forgive you. And then before we left, there was an argument that we had. And I think what really happened was I reverted to my childlike self. I said some things that might hurt his feelings. I said, you know, you didn't want to see us. You didn't want to see me. And this is where you've gone. Like, what is your life outside of waiting for me to come see you again? Like, who are you when you are not mourning the time that you no longer live in the U.S. and you are not with your kids? And I think for him, what it meant to be a father was to provide materially. And he took that really hard on himself. And I told him, even if you were not my father in those times present, I had to grow up. And I have those skills now. And those skills on some level have brought me back to you. So we are still connected and I'm still learning. And if you're a parent, I would hope that you want your child to learn, you know, one way or another, because our story is not unique. You know, there are parents who are, you know, taken out of this life before they get to see their children grow up. So I told them, you are still alive and I'm still alive and I get to see you and hug you. And that is a gift in and of itself. And so, when we left, I had my argument with him and I just kept telling myself, why was I just so hurt and upset? And I think that just in the larger picture, it's really about forgiving myself and forgiving him, because when I think of just the way that his life had to be when he was 20 and 30, and I think of myself as a 20-year-old, I'm just, how did he have kids at that age and do everything if I can't even take care of myself? And I'm learning to take care with just my dog and my cat. And I think that leaving the college life, leaving, you know, the US and just being in a completely different world was like my own hero's journey. And I felt like my call to adventure was going, and I feel like my darkest depth was crying to my dad and telling him, like, I'm upset that you did all these things. And coming home was my return of like, okay, what does this mean? And I love my dad. I love him for who he is, for what happened. And I released him from like the guilt that I have and all that stuff. I just know that it was kind of saying, okay, I have nurtured this connection, this branch that flows to me. And now I have more energy to grow in different ways and be my full self. And it was like unlocking a water gate and just receiving all of that. And the way it showed up in my emotional masculinity was literally my physical body, because I feel like I didn't have a blueprint of what I physically was supposed to look like growing up. And then I saw him and I was kind of like, wow, you're kind of buff. And I'm like, you did a lot of labor jobs and you look like this. Like, if our genetics are the same and if I do labor in a healthy way to take care of myself, like, how will I look? And I think that's where the shift of adulthood comes into play, because with my father, it was like the way I feel like I heal my mama wound and my father wound is through two different ways. And I was reflecting on it yesterday. And I think, I haven't really spoken to my mom, but with my mom, she has a lot of like anxious avoidant tendencies and things where she says yes and she's super extroverted, and I learned a lot from her and I love her, and I know that I'm very good socially because of the way that I learned from her. But I also know that a lot of the way that I behave with stressing things out is from her, and I feel that I have healed that wound by meditating and like doing sound bowls and recognizing in my body that I am safe And I think that attributes more to feminine energy, not like feminine means women, but feminine energy itself, as in the feeling, the experience of feeling and like sitting with that. And sometimes overactiveness of sitting with it too much. And I feel that my masculinity, which is related to goal orientation or action or movement, was blocked for so long. And I think that healing my mom wound when I came back from San Diego happened within my first 6 months, but healing my dad wound was the biggest wound that I had. And I think that when I overcame my father wound and I connected it with healing my mom wound, I became like a new person and I started to accept myself and who I am. And there's this quote that says, you know, it was not your fault that you were harmed, but it is in your responsibility and the best interest for you to heal in your experience, you know? And I tell myself, like, I do not know what my life would have been like if something else did happen. You know, I know this experience and all I can attest to is just who I connect with. So connecting with my mom and connecting with my dad together, I feel shows me that it's not really about, because I think of the lesson of my life recently, to like switch the gears into the last part, how they come together, is this image of reparenting myself. And I think with my mother reparenting myself, it was a lot about telling myself, okay, saying no to this, say no to that, take care of yourself, communicate better. With my father, it was that physical action of being healthy and that physical action. And when I started to move more, I started to meditate more. I feel that there's this guideship or mentorship that is no longer their voices. Because sometimes I question, what does consciousness sound like in everyone's head? And sometimes I'm like, it sounds like little cricket from Pinocchio to me. And sometimes it sounds like you, professor. And sometimes it sounds like my mom or my dad. But I realize that consciousness, that voice can be me. It is my voice that I'm just doing it to my inspiration of those that I trust in. And it's this spirit that I believe in my psychology that just takes different forms to teach me different lessons. Does that make sense?
Yes. But I want to go back to the masculine.
Yes, yes. Go
just
for it.
And I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest is David Gudiel, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And you talked about kind of the masculinity piece and seeing your dad, it unlocked in you this opportunity to have a healthier relationship, because I think in many ways you rejected the masculine because you had to reject your father. You felt rejected by your father. And so you rejected that he represented, which was being buff and, you know, doing labor jobs. But healing that with your dad, coming to peace, you know, realizing, hey, I can accept you for who you are, and I no longer need you to parent me as a child because I can take care of myself. But also now I am free to embrace being strong and working out and developing my masculine side because I no longer see it as threatening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think you hit the nail right on the head. It was really that threatening piece of witnessing domestic abuse when I was growing up and attuning that to physical strength and body and me being scared of what that means. I think when I look at it now, it's more of a connection of with oneself and rebridging and releasing. Cause I feel when I would see him, I would physically see him and I was like, you might be buff, but you're also really tense in your shoulders. And I think when I think of my body, I'm like, I have to release tenseness in my shoulders more because I do not want to carry these things that have been passed on. And I know that a lot of it's also intergenerational trauma, which leads me to give more grace to my parents, because just like I think of this person that I'm like, my dad needed to be this person for me, I recognize that he is a human and he has his own experiences that make him flawed and make him have his strengths. And in that process, I take what the strengths are and what is good for me, and I discard the rest, because at the end of the day, I believe that these are messages that come from my universe and not directly from him. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so here we are, you know, we started off the show talking about, here was the story of who David was going to be. I mean, you're a first gen college student. You grew up in a home that had domestic violence and your dad was deported and your mom kind of had to make her way, and you end up at Poly. And so all this pressure on you, and I see it in my first gen students, you've got to achieve, you have to be stellar. You've got to make not just for yourself, but for your entire family. And you come through Poly and then you are leaving into the world like, oh my goodness, I have all these skills and all these jobs and I'm going to kill it. But they all wash up because of the pandemic. And so then you go through this year and you're trying to get your first apartment and learn how to pay rent and get your first job. But then you go have this moment with your father, this period of time in Guatemala. And we didn't even get to touch a lot on just kind of reconnecting to that part of you that is Guatemalan and mm-hmm. from that place and how that shifts in you. So now here we come to this full circle. The one path, the first path of what a first-gen student has to do. And then the second path is I'm going to reject it all and just, you know, do nothing. But you've done this healing. And what is the path you find yourself on in this moment?
That's a good question. And I would say the path is healing. And I think I've always seen myself as a healer in some way, shape, or form under different names. I wanted to be a doctor. But I recognize that for me, it's healing because I see that, like I said, the concept of the spirit that everyone has in different ways. I believe that when people get to share about their open and honest experiences, we start to realize that we have so much in common with others, or the same social structures affect us in different ways. And whether they're negative or positive, we get to choose how we shape our society from that. And it's funny because I got a 40-hour job after college, and it was in this health realm of canvassing, but with Farm Fresh Box, doing a CSA program, community supported agriculture. And I told my mom, I got my 40-hour job and I'm doing these things, but I was not happy. I was away from my dog and my cat. I was away from my fiance. And I told myself, I know that in my body, I want to be where my home is, where my heart is. And I can take care of work at home, but I can't take care of my home if I'm at work. So I watched the movie Soul on Christmas. And on the day after Christmas, I quit my job. I gave no 2-week notice. And I threw myself into Feels Good, which is what I call the inner spirit. Because I feel like on some level, our inner spirit is that voice that tells us, I like this. Continue this. What is this curiosity that's calling to you? And at this point, I think it's no longer connected to my parents, but more so connected to my inner voice and to what the things that I want. So recently, I have just been seeing that show up in different ways. And I've realized that what I do now is I've started officially to become like a yoga instructor. Like my training for that, I do sound bowl meditation healing with crystal sound bowls. I do guided meditation, which I've learned from you. And I think what that does for me is just give a narrative or do a storytelling for people to follow along and see where they relate in their story and what comes up for them. And then asking them, where does this show up in your body? And how can we release this energy that we have? Because we're all beings of energy in some way. I know that you know that, but I like to say that we are physical atoms that are vibrating at a certain frequency every single time. And when we are happy, we vibrate differently because our atoms are rearranged differently for our neurons to fire, for our brain to release these chemicals for us to feel happiness. So it's really just about understanding how energy just moves also. And I think that's what's been really interesting to me. And I know that my mom sometimes I remember one time she was like, well, you're not going to be a doctor anymore. Like, there goes our dreams, because I didn't want to follow med school anymore. And that's societal, what I'm supposed to do. I got my degree. All these doors open up. But I was like, Mom, the doors are not opening up because there are no doors. There's this concept there. And it's hard to tell her that the story that she was told is a bit of a lie to people that are Black, Indigenous, or people of color in the United States, or if you are of lower class, or if you have a disability, or if you're queer. Like, that is not the story for everyone, Mom. And so it's hard to come up to her and tell her, I'm not going to do this, but trust that I'm going to be happy and I'm going to love. And when she sees me now, first she was like, I don't know if I like this. But now when I see her, she's like, can you give me a massage, please? And I give her a massage, a cranial sacral head, all that good stuff. And I tell her, you are safe. You know, you deserve rest. You deserve rest. You are worthy. And when I say these to her, I'm saying them also to myself. And I say those things to her for all the times that she didn't get a chance to tell them to me. So it's kind of also reparenting my parents at the same time when I do my healing. And the way I like to view it is, you know, I know we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but the whole quantum physics concept that molecules in some area of space of the universe can affect other molecules. And I feel that that's kind of what healing and energy changes. When I started to heal and when I started to have those conversations with my mom, like, you know, I'm upset at you because you did this to me growing up. And I know it's not your fault that you did this because you were given a certain life and I'm just a story in it. And she was like, well, my mom used to do the same thing to me. And I'm like, so this is a story that was told before you and before your mother. And it comes down to us to change that story, because I'm not going to write this for my kids. And I'm not going to tell my kids the things that I was told growing up, because I know how that feels. And it's just this cycle of change, because at the end of the day, we're all living in a storybook. And I know that Professor Barrett always talked about it in class. And I feel like that's how I attribute my psychology to creating my storybook and seeing myself sometimes as a story and seeing my life also sometimes as a movie, as a documentary, as a music video, because I think that I would love my pleasure and pleasure of just being my life. And I think going to school, I had all this energy to be in class and talk to people. And now I have all this energy to talk with myself and to talk with other people that I get to choose and I get to be in community with, which is something that is really hard, because when you, it's really like sometimes it's really hard to make friends outside of a college institution or a job. And I feel like I'm doing that. I'm becoming my own friend again in my own spirit. Does that make sense?
Well, it does to me, but more than it does to you. But I think, again, because I'm hearing so much amazing energy coming out of you. And that's what happens when you hit on something in our lives that resonates and we get so fired up and excited that we want the whole world to hear it. And so here's what I'm hearing from you is that you took this very traditional psychology degree from a traditional university, and you are taking that knowledge. And it's so fun to hear you, throw in the quantum physics and the energy piece. And then you're using quotes from philosophers, like all of the pieces of this education from this very traditional institution. Mm-hmm. You are now making that material your own. You're instead of just following and now become an LMFT or now become a social worker, you're saying, no, there's a lot of indigenous healing practices from Guatemala that I brought back to here, or that I've learned, with the people that I'm spending time with in San Diego, that's what I think excites me for your generation, is that when the path that you were told you're supposed to follow dries up for whatever reason, or isn't a possibility, or the opportunities aren't there, you're forced then to find another way to make your way in the world. And what you're doing is taking this traditional education, but utilizing it in traditional practices, mm-hmm. in new ways of being a psychologist, a healer in the mm-hmm. field of the healing or helping professions. And I think that's what I want people to hear from your story, is that you are absolutely a psychology student in your own defined way, because mm-hmm. a good healer continuously does their own healing work. The mm-hmm. job of a therapist is to constantly be working in self-care, constantly be recognizing our blind spots or areas where we can improve, because we can't be there in service of others if we're hung up on our old narratives. And that's what I hear, David, is that this yes. year, it's almost as if you did a year of graduate school, but in a more authentic education to serve who you're going to be as a healer. I don't think a traditional graduate degree would have brought you to this place, because now you're creating a practice that is true to you and to your generation. So mm-hmm. we talked about kind of how you're expressing yourself, how you keep discovering who you are. And there was a poem that really spoke to you. And I want to touch on that before we close things up today. Okay.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, thank you for, thank you for summarizing that up, because that was beautiful. And this poem, I think I talk about a lot about what it means to come to talk to my inner spirit, to my inner child and growing up. So, okay. And this all, I wrote this, I think 2 days ago for the new moon, because my moon sign is in Aries and I was really into my feelings. So it goes like this. A new moon offers us a moment to withdraw into oneself. I must listen and observe to the motions and flows of my universe. If I close my eyes, where am I transported and how can I get there? The new moon is powerful because even if we cannot see it, it is still there, ominous and silent. The moon represents my inner child today, the kid who protected himself with his thick books to replace his sensitive skin. Dear little David, so much has happened in your journey. Thank you for making it this far. Thank you for holding on to yourself all these years, hiding in the corners of my mind. Please forgive me for the moments I neglected you. I am here now with an open heart, ready to embrace you and try new things. I know you felt alone growing up. We made friends in our books and the magical worlds they create for us, seeing ourselves in the main character and finding family alongside the heroes. I finally made it. Thank you for your patience, little David. I'm ready for you to lead the way and for me to reach any high countertops for you. It took me some time and a couple lessons to realize that every time I ran away, it was always from you. I used to think you were a byproduct of darkness, and now I am the light. I now know that we are both equal parts of light and dark. One cannot exist without the other, you and I. Today, I make a commitment to learn about you again and to listen to the stories that have weighed down your heart. Release and lay down the books. There's no need for thickness to block you from the world. Your sensitivity and perception is a unique gift. Can't you see? It is time we work together to nurture the gifts we possess to shape our universe. There will be moments ahead when we are called to learn from one another. I promise to be humble and willing. We have done this journey before, and together we will do it again, stronger than ever. We will break the chains we have carried in our DNA, and through our ancestors, we will live and honor our fullest truth. I love you, little David. I love you. Me and you together again.
It's beautiful because if, you know, anyone who's done therapy or kind of done that self-work, we talk a lot about, you know, one of the therapy buzzwords is the inner child work, that we have to go back and repair the ways that we were hurt as children, the ways that we tried to run away from the ways that we were hurt as children, and kind of let go of that expectation that some other adult is going to step in and keep us safe and protected. And so you kind of describe that whole experience of looking back inside with compassion and saying, whoever we were when we were young, or however I was when I was young, was good enough for the time. And now moving on, I will continue to honor who I am and who I was with compassion and love, and not have to look externally to be accepted through either my parents. I can love my parents fully without mm-hmm. needing them to take care of my inner child or myself. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, you have your Instagram account where you kind of share your stories and experiences mm-hmm. and kind of your healing and your growth. And how do people find you?
So my Instagram handle is going to be at DGUDIEL18. So it's just D for David and then Gudiel, my last name, and the number 18. If you would like to all follow me on Instagram, stay tuned to what I do.
Follow David's story. I look forward to, you know, at some point figuring out how we bring some sort of sound, you know, the healing bowls to the show and kind of start incorporating more and more the alternative healings, because
I'm ready.
Because I feel like that's where we're going in the future. That this merging of our old talk therapy and CBT and the medical model that we've been kind of hanging on to, that's busting up because it's not serving enough people. Mm-hmm. And so now we're opening up this with the small toe. Maybe there are other ways we can get better. Maybe it's safe to let go of some of that old narrative and trust what's new. And your generation's going to lead it. So thank you, David, for being my student, my friend, and a fellow healer. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and supporting our show. It's a great time to donate to KCBX for offering these programs and for giving you a place to stop in and learn new things week after week. You can follow us on Instagram. You can follow us on Facebook. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. And please podcast the show if you're interested. Hit subscribe, leave a review so more people can find us. And until next Tuesday at 2, thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.